Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We have been discussing the transcendental nature of the Lord's names, citing some evidence from the Rig Veda and other smritis. Now, we also are going to hear from the personified Vedas from the 87th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Etat sarvam abhipretya garva stutav uktam. Nanama rupe guna karma janma vir nirupitavye tavatasya sakshinaha mano vachobhyam anumeya vartmano devakriyayam pratiyantyatapihi. With all this in mind, it is said in the prayers to Krishna in the womb. Oh, no, this is not the Sanavad Vedas. This is the demigods praying to Krishna in Devaki's womb. And they said, the names and forms of you, the witness of everything, cannot be ascertained in terms of material births, qualities, and activities. But your names... and forms manifest themselves, O Lord, when one engages in devotional service. Okay, let's try to explain this. Everything that exists in this world has names and forms. And there's scientific and philosophical investigations to explain the names and forms and categorize them. But the names and forms of the Supreme Lord cannot be analyzed as material names and forms are. Rather, they manifest themselves, they show themselves, they reveal themselves, the names and forms of the Lord, to those who engage in his devotional service. That's a demonstration of the fact that these names and forms are transcendental. Okay, let's see what the commentary says. The demigods assembled before Mother Devaki in Kamsa's dungeon expressed themselves tersely in this prayer. They proposed to Krishna in Devaki's womb that his names and forms, names and appearances, cannot be known by comparison to any materially born person's qualities, activities, or mode of birth. But they can be perceived kriyayam, in kriya. What do they mean by kriya, which is commonly understood as activity? Or maybe more technically, ritual activity, or maybe yoga practice. These are normal or technical meanings of the word kriya. Our acharyas, Sridhar Swami and Sri Jiva Goswami, explain in their commentaries on this verse. Srila Sridhar comments that kriya means the activities of worship and other forms of devotional service, that the implied subject of this activity is your worshippers. And the verb, so that's what kriya is, the activities of devotional service, the subject of this activity, the ones who do that activity are your worshippers. And the verb pratiyanti in this verse means they see with their own eyes. Prati-i means to perceive. And in philosophy, Vedanta philosophy, that means to actually perceive with your senses. Srila Jiva takes kriya to be the devotional practices which begin with hearing and chanting. And the names and forms of the Lord to be the subject of the verb pratyanti.
Oh, okay.
So this is a different explanation. Who gave the verb? Sridhar Swami's explanation. This is in their Bhagavatam commentaries. But Sridhar Swami reads it differently. Instead of the devotees being the subject, here the names and forms of the Lord are the subject of the verb pratyanti. The practice of devotional service by hearing, chanting, and so on leads gradually to the dawn of devotional service in full realization, upon the awakening of which the Supreme Lord's names and forms reveal themselves. So I guess pratyanti means reveal themselves. I guess so. Although that would be that should be a passive form, and it's not. Anyway, I'd have to look at the commentary and see how that works. Any questions on that? Yes?
The names and the forms of the Lord manifest only to the devotees?
Generally, only on the rare occasions when he makes his public appearances. Then everybody sees, but they don't. Most people don't understand what they're seeing. Most people don't recognize that this is the Supreme Lord.
Can we say that if non-devotees come in contact with the holy name, and the holy name doesn't really reveal, it's not revealing to them?
Well, that was discussed in, a little while before, that it gives them the best chance to gain some realization, that those who are ignorant of the Supreme Lord can gain understanding of him and attraction to him just by hearing his names. But they have to be receptive. And to get the full benefit, they have to not be offensive. Okay. Yes, Damodar.
It's back. I think a few answers. No, the last one yesterday that we touched upon is that if pure spiritual, how can names of Krishna appear in our senses?
Yes.
what was it? Is that okay? The names are spiritual, so material senses cannot understand.
Yeah.
But the Lord has invested in our senses the ability to understand.
Yes. He makes the impossible possible. He empowers our senses to perceive his names and forms. Well, that's the general function of the Supersoul. Yeah. I don't think that applies here. This is a special mercy. The Supersoul, the Lord gives knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness to everybody in ordinary circumstances, in ordinary life. This is a special situation where he's revealing himself to his devotees. Yes.
If I remember correctly, in the 10th canto, in the same chapter, prayers of the personified Vedas, Shukadeva Goswami answers Parikshit Maharaj's question about the same thing. How can our gross material senses and the mind perceive transcendental names and forms of the Lord? And he starts answering by saying that in the same way as our senses are able to perceive the world, he empowered us to perceive the world, and without his empowerment, our senses wouldn't have been able even to perceive this material world around us. It would have been as transcendental for us as his names are. So there's nothing surprising about him empowering us also to perceive him, if he wants. So he does draw some parallels between Paramatma empowerment of our senses and empowerment of our
there's
senses.
A parallel.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Day-to-day
experience is just wonderful for us. Thank you. Okay. Let's move into the next paragraph. Tata rupasyapi vailakshanyam svapakashata lakshana swarupa shaktyai vavir bhavitvam. What makes the Lord's form also unique is its appearing by the Lord's personal potency of self-manifestation, as we have already demonstrated. Okay, we were talking about the Lord's names appearing by his energy, by his personal intervention. He allows us to realize his names. Same thing with his form. Tatcha purvam darshitam. And that's been shown before. Ata eva dvitiye. Atma tatva vishudyartam yadaha bhagavan ritam brahmane darshayan rupa ovyalika vatadita taha. Thus, there's a statement in the second canto. This is what the Supreme Lord spoke to Brahma while revealing his true form. He did this to help Brahma discern the reality of the self, being satisfied with his honest execution of his vow. So in response to Brahma's attempt of meditating and worshipping, the Supreme Lord gave two forms of his mercy. He gave instructions, but he also gave he showed himself. Also, he revealed his form. Ityatra tika cha. And here is Sridhar Swami's comments on this verse. Yachoktam ashtamadhyaye parameshwarasya pi deha sambandha visheshat katam tad bhaktya mokshaksyad iti asid yadudarad padmam ityadina. So Sridhar Swami says, since it has been stated in the 8th chapter, one second, that the Supreme Lord is also like other persons in having connection with a body, how then can liberation result from being devoted to him? He's just another embodied being. So how does he have the power to give liberation? Indeed, it has been said, a lotus appeared from his abdomen. Okay, so he's got a body, he's got an abdomen, and lotuses grow out of it. So how can such an embodied being be the giver of liberation? Tatraha Atma tatva vishudyartam iti atmano jivasya tatva vishudyartam tatva gyanartam tatva vedeva. In answer to this doubt, this occurrence of Narayan revealing his form to Brahma was, quote, Atma tattva vishuddhyartham, that is, for the purpose of discerning the truth or scientific knowledge of the self, that is, the jiva. What actually happened is asked. Kim kurvan? No. Kim tat? Yat tapa adinaswa bhajanam Bhagavan Brahmane Aha. What actually happened? The Supreme Lord described to Brahma how to worship him by austerity and other means. Okay, that's the instructions that the Lord gave to Brahma. Kim kurvan ritam satyam chidgamam rupam darshayan. And what was the Lord doing while he gave those instructions? Hare Krishna. I'm sorry. What was he doing at that time? Showing his real form, his eternal, purely spiritual form. Okay, why did he do that? Why did he show his form? Darshane Hetu Avyalikena Vratena Tapas Adritaha Sevita San. So why did he show his form? Because he was honored, rendered service by Lord Brahma's honest execution of his vow, Brahma's concentrated discipline. So being satisfied with Brahma, therefore he showed his form. Ayam bhavaha jivas avidyaya mitya bhuta deha sambandaha ishvarasya tu yogamayaya chidgana vigraha virbhava iti mahan visheshaha. Implied by this is that the jiva's false bodily connection is due to illusion, but the Lord's appearance in his pure spiritual body is by his yogamaya. This is a significant difference. Okay, and then we draw the conclusion. Atas tadbhajane moksha upapatir iti ityesha. Therefore, by worshipping him, one attains liberation. And that's Sridhar Swami's commentary on that verse. Okay, now our commentary. In the prayer by Gajendra under discussion in this Anuchet, this is Gajendra's prayer? I guess at the beginning of the Anuchet, we have the verse. Anybody have the beginning of the Anuchet? 46.1? That would be in file 11? 10?
Navidyate yasya cha janma karma va nama rupe guna dosha eva tathapi loka api asambhava yasvamaya tanyam kala uchati.
A translation.
I don't have yours.
Okay. I think I used Prabhupada's version.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no material birth, activities, name, form, qualities, or faults. To fulfill the purpose for which this material world is created and destroyed, he comes in the form of a human being, like Lord Rama or Lord Krishna, by his original internal potency. Okay, that's it.
And that's spoken by Gajendra?
Yeah.
Okay. In the prayer by Gajendra under discussion in this Anuchet, the King of Elephants stated that although the Supreme Lord has no ordinary birth, activities, names, forms, virtues, and faults, he does have these in their perfect forms. To explain this verse, Srila Jiva Goswami has up to this point defined, okay, this is the things he's been talking about in this Anuchet. He's up to this point defined the uniqueness of the Lord's birth. He did that in 46.10. And the uniqueness of his activities. That's in 46.11 through 14. And about the uniqueness of his names. That was in 46.15 up to 26. Now he turns to defining what makes the Lord's personal form unique. Unlike the form of any ordinary person, the Supreme Lord's form is not generated. Rather, it displays itself by the personal energy of the Lord, which is entrusted with making arrangements for him to appear wherever and whenever he wants. That the Lord's form appeared by his Swarupa Shakti, of self-manifestation. This is special Shakti, a particular Shakti, the Shakti of by which he manifests himself. That fact that it appears by that Shakti has been demonstrated previously back in Anuchet 10. A verse spoken by Markandeya Rishi was introduced in Anuchet 10. Can we jump to Anuchet 10? Can you find it? A verse spoken by Markandeya Rishi was introduced there, in which the sage equates sattvam, the mode of goodness, with purusha rupam, the personal form of Lord Vishnu. This sattva, however, is not the material sattva guna, but svaprakashata lakshana sarupa shakti vritti visheshaha. That was what Jiva Goswami said about it. A special function of the Lord's internal energy, identified as this power to manifest himself. That's a statement from Jiva Goswami in 10.12. Oh, that's okay if you can't find it. A special function of the Lord's internal energy, identified as his power to manifest himself. It's a particular aspect of his internal energy. How this spiritual mode of goodness is non-different from the Lord in his essence is further clarified in that anuchet on the basis of two verses from the demigod's prayers to Krishna in his mother's womb. So the material mode of goodness is the mode that evokes knowledge in the heart. The spiritual mode of goodness similarly evokes the revelation of the Supreme Lord, his names and his forms, his power of self-manifestation. Okay, in those prayers by the demigods to Krishna in his mother's womb, the demigods say that his sattvam, his mode of existence, is vijnanam, which Srila Jiva explains as meaning anubhavas tadatmika svapakashita shaktir. So here, sattvam, in this verse by the demigods praying to Krishna in Devaki's womb, they use the word sattva, and Jiva Goswami explains sattva as conscious experience, or in other words, the energy comprising such awareness by which he manifests himself. How does the Lord manifest himself? He reflects himself in the consciousness of the living entities. You know, he enters their hearts and shows himself through their awareness, their consciousness, by his special svaprakashata shakti. Yes,
just wanted to clarify, is there a coma? Is there the energy comprising such awareness by which he manifests himself, that which he manifests himself refers to awareness or the energy?
It's the energy.
The energy. I wonder if there's any coma is required.
There is a comma there, okay. But that's a comma because it's a parenthetical phrase. Comprising, there's a comma before it also, so that doesn't help. The comma is after it because it's closing a parenthetical phrase.
I wonder if it's going to be ambiguous word.
Well, there being a comma there, so that it doesn't allow it to modify awareness.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. The comma is already there for another purpose, but it also helps that way. Okay. Continuing, in Chapter 8 of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj submits several questions to his Guru Shukadev, which will be answered in the course of the remainder of the Bhagavatam. Among these questions plural, I have singular. Okay. Most of them are about, I left out the word are, the Lord, the Supreme Lord's, okay, among these questions, most of them are about the Supreme Lord's involvement in material creation. Parikshit makes the comment, Yeah, so Parikshit's asking a lot of questions about material creation. And he says, Parikshit says, Asidya Rudarad Padmam Loka Samstana Lakshanam Yavanayam Vaipurusha Yatavaya Vaik Prita Tavana Saviti Prokta Samstava Vayavaniva. From the abdomen of the Supreme Lord, a lotus plant appeared, known as the basis for the construction of the worlds. To the same extent that an ordinary person is described as having separate limbs of specific dimensions, so this Lord is also said to have his arrangement of limbs. That was back in the paragraph we were reading. There was a mention of the lotus coming out of his navel. So that's describing the Lord as having a body like we have bodies, with various limbs of those bodies, and having particular dimensions. We conceive of the Lord as being infinite and being disembodied. But here he is with a body and with specific size. Now, Sridhar Swami, that was the verse from the second, eighth chapter of the second canto, spoken by Parikshit. Sridhar Swami, following whose commentary this translation of the verse has been done by Prabhupada, Sridhar Swami draws the conclusion implied by King Parikshit. Okay, so why is Parikshit talking about this lotus coming out of the navel? What's the relevance? Because Parikshit is implying the question. What difference is there then between the Supreme Lord and ordinary persons? We don't have lotuses growing out of our navels, but we have navels. You know, we have different parts of our bodies. And as Srila Sridhar puts in his comment on the verse cited here from the next chapter of the second canto, that means the ninth chapter, why should worshipping him lead to liberation? If he's just another person with a navel. The example of what Brahma achieved by his spiritual practice settles this doubt. That's described in the ninth chapter of the second canto. After doing all his 1,000 years of austerities, the Supreme Lord was pleased and revealed himself. Brahma strictly applied himself to the discipline of meditation as a way of worshipping his creator, Lord Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Satisfied with Brahma's effort, Lord Vishnu had his energy Yogamaya arranged for Brahma to see Vaikuntha and meet Lord Narayan, of whom the three Vishnus are expansions for material creation. Lord Narayan gave Brahma instructions. So Brahma came from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the immediate deity worshipped by Brahma. But Narayan is the original from whom the three Vishnus expand. Lord Narayan gave Brahma instructions, including the four-verse encapsulation of Srimad Bhagavatam, and empowered Brahma to execute his duty of creation. From the prototype forms in the stem of the lotus on which he was born, that means in that lotus stem, and that's the stem of the lotus plant on the flower of which he took his birth. From that, he went back down into the stem and found all the ingredients for creation, or rather the prototypes. Just like a hard drive has programs stored in it. The computer takes those programs and runs particular instances of the processes. They can run the same program 5 times in memory. But there's one prototype, one stored copy of the program on the hard drive. Like that, there's a stored copy of every form of life and every form of every planet and everything in creation. There's an original copy in the universal form, which is the lotus stem. From the prototype forms in the stem of the lotus on which he was born, Brahma produced all the worlds and the species of life inhabiting them. Enlightened by the Bhagavatam, he became a pure devotee of Lord Narayan, and at the end of his creation, he will be returning to his eternal home in the Lord's kingdom. Meditating on someone embodied in matter would never have produced the results Brahma obtained. So Brahma attained the perfection of going back to Godhead. He hasn't done it yet, but he's on his way. And he did it by meditating on Narayan and Narayan's instructions and his form. If Narayan was an ordinary person, just like anybody else with a navel, then you wouldn't achieve such results of meditating on them, thinking about that person. Okay, any questions?
Okay. Expression stemming out, is it coming from? Stemming out, is it coming from? Stem out?
Stem out.
Yeah, in English, you have stem out expression coming from.
Stem out, yes.
Does it have any relation with the Vedic concept of creation?
Well, originally, yes. Indirectly.
Some traditions.
It's time for questions.
Yeah, the lotus, is it all the universe is in the lotus? All the planet races are in the lotus?
No, the prototypes from which the planets are created.
Okay. But
the plants, the blueprints are in the lotus then.
Okay. And everything else is outside?
Yeah, once it's created. There's nothing outside in the beginning.
Oh, you was mentioning before that Lord Rama is becoming devotee after he hear Bhagavatam from Lord Narayan. So what about before that? He was not a devotee? Or?
Not yet. I mean, he practiced sadhana. He didn't take birth as a pure devotee. He became a pure devotee.
Oh, become pure devotees.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the demigods are some kind of devotee. All the Vatsavika Brahma is the best of all the demigods. They're all devotees, but they're generally impure devotees because they have material desires. Brahma had some subtle desire. He wanted to be creator. So he got that opportunity because he wanted to be creator. That's a material desire.
So what about the next day of Brahma after he heard Bhagavatam from Lord Narayan, there will be the accident where Lord Rama will be bewildered by his
daughter
again?
Yeah, but that's yoga maya. That's participation in Krishna's pastimes. That bewilderment. That's a personal reciprocation with Krishna. That only because he's a pure devotee is he allowed to even join in Krishna's pastimes.
He's
different. Indra came and was envious of Krishna and had a fight with him. Brahma didn't have any real fight with Krishna. He's just playing with him.
But he's running after the
He was nasty after his daughter.
Oh, that was earlier.
That's when that after hearing Bhagavatam he came.
No, that was way. That was in the beginning of his life.
Okay, it's not happening every day.
Yes. No. Okay.
Just to clarify, so first of all, they had this lotus steam, and inside this lotus steam, they were all ingredients for creation. Then Lord Brahma took all these ingredients and he expanded it. So now we have this material world. And so, but what happened with this lotus steam itself?
Rather, not ingredients, but the plans. You know, you have a blueprints of a house or a building. And the ingredients are something different. The architect makes the plans, and someone else goes and buys the bricks and the steel and the cement. Those are the ingredients. Two different things. The ingredients are from the Mahatattva, and the elements come out of the Mahatattva. But this is just the plans for the creation that are in the lotus stem.
I mean, inside this universe, because we know that
it's inside the universe, well. The elements are there, yes.
So are they also inside this little steam?
Not necessarily. They're outside. In fact, the Mahatattva, there's not a separate Mahatattva for each universe. Each universe has its own stock of each of the elements, but there's still an original stock of the Mahatattva that pervades all the universes. So if you run out of, you know, run out of some element, you can go back to the original Mahatattva and get more from outside.
So, and finally, what happened with this lotus steam?
It's still there. Yeah, but it's a very subtle form. Only great yogis and devotees can see it.
But it's possible to be seen.
If you want to, yeah. Yeah, it's possible. It's there. Okay. We'll start this direction. Okay, go ahead.
If I remember correctly, in the third canto, when there is creation described by Brahma and the process of sprouting of that lotus flower from the abdomen, I think it is mentioned there that the lotus bud is the personification of Mahatattva. Mahatattva sprouts from lotus abdomen at this point, and it says that the Lord becomes blue because of the aggregate karma following entities.
This is Mahavishnu or
Mahavishnu?
But the Mahatattva.
Maybe just comes
from Mahatattva is created by, or you know, the Mahatattva is manifested by Mahavishnu's glancing at Maya. So before there is any Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, there's already a Mahatattva. But Mahatattva has to enter the universe and enters. The way you just said, yeah.
Like that.
Yes.
So maybe it is in some way equated with material realness as well, is it?
Yeah, but what is it exactly? Mahatattva does what?
As far as I remember, because you can't look it up because I don't have a computer part. It says there that the Mahatattva takes shape of lotus flower, sprouts from his abdomen, and then.
The flower?
I mean, bud.
Yeah.
It starts sprouting from his, and pierces his abdomen, and sprouts. And then Lord Brahma is on top of it?
Yes.
And then he creates like...
Okay, so then the ingredients are not in the stem, but on the flower, in the bud.
I mean, it's a whole thing.
Well, the bud is on top of the stem.
Well, it's the flower. The beginning of sprouting is the bud. I have to look it up. I don't know. I don't remember if it's...
Okay. I don't.
I just wanted to clarify it for myself. But probably we'll have to look up that first.
Okay. Good enough.
I heard after happened this lila, this pastime, he ran, so I'm asking about Brahma, he ran after his daughter. I heard he left his body after that.
It's described several times in, I think, the 8th chapter of the 3rd canon, Brahma's having to leave his body. But that's just giving up a particular mentality. He doesn't actually die. These are just subtle, like shells of his ego. You know, he's not really giving up his body. To give up his body means to die. But Brahma doesn't die. He just changes his mentality. Puts aside that attitude. It takes another attitude. Okay. Yeah.
This is a foolish question, but sometimes the people are asking. If we're talking about lotus flower, lotus stem, that must be that lotus plant.
Lotus plant?
I mean, there are leaves, etc.
Well, there's stem.
When
leaves? I don't know what the leaves are.
Sometimes I'm surprised.
Yeah, I know lotus has big leaves, but I don't know this lotus where the leaves are. I don't know.
Can it be in one lotus flower is one universe? And then another can be like
that. No, the lotus flower is growing out of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu inside one universe. The Garbhadakshaya Vishnu from whom the lotus flower comes is inside one universe. Okay, so it belongs to just one universe, the whole flower, the whole plant. Okay, we better go back. We're getting off on side trips. 46:28. Ata eva sattvam triloka stitaye. Anybody have that? I just wanted a reference for that, but it's okay. Ata eva sattvam triloka stitaye idyadi padyadvaye srimad anandaka dubinapi samahitam. Sri Anandaka Dundubi Vasudev has thus come to the same conclusion in the two verses beginning. Begins. For the maintenance of the three worlds, did something. The meaning of these verses is as follows. Atra hi ayam artaha. Sapapancha se shrishti stiti pralaya karta. Twam triloka stitaye. Yada tasya stitimichasi. Tata swamayaya swashritaya maya shaktya twitva atmanak shuklam varnam swena shrishnam dharmaparam viprati jatam biparshi palayasi. Okay, this is what, who's speaking here? Vasudev says. The meaning of these verses is as follows. Here's Jiva Goswami's paraphrase. When that person, you, the executor of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material world, desires its the maintenance of the world, then you uphold or you protect by your own maya, by the potency of illusion, who is under your shelter, you uphold or protect your, quote, white class, Shuklam Varnam. The social divisions of Brahmins and others created by you, who are devoted to the principles of religion. That's when the Lord wants to maintain. He empowers the Brahmins and those others who are in the mode of goodness. Okay, continuing. And then, Atra Sattva Mai Eva Swamaya Gyaya. Nishkrishta twad upayukta twat cha. Here, the phrase your own maya should be understood as comprising the material mode of goodness. Your maya, me, is your goodness, your mode of goodness. The material mode of goodness. Your maya means the material mode of goodness here. Because it is inferior. And because this identification is suitable for the context. How the Lord empowers the Brahmins and others. How does he empower them? By giving them the influence of the material mode of goodness. That's how he maintains the material world. By the material mode of goodness. Okay. Now what about passion and ignorance? Atta yada sargam ichasi. Tada rajasa rajomaya swamayaya kritva upabrimhitam raktam kaminam vipradi varnam bibarshi. It says vipradi. Is that a mistake? Then. When you desire creation, sarga, you uphold the red, desireful class of Brahmins. Brahmins and others, not just Kshatriyas, but there's some Brahmins who are passionate too. The desireful class of Brahmins and others who are full of passion. Your maya in the mode of passion. Okay, just like the Prajapatis. They're Brahmanas, but they're creators. So they're influenced somewhat by passion. I think I jumped to the wrong place here. Yadacha janatyayam ichasi, tada tamasa tamomaya kritva krishnam malinam paparatam tam bibarshi. And when you desire the depopulation, janatya, of the world, you uphold by ignorance, your maya in the mode of ignorance, the class who are black, contaminated, or addicted to sin. Okay, that's one explanation of what was said in that verse. Atava, or here's an alternative explanation. Atava, yada stittim ichasi, tadatmatak shri vishnu rupasya, shuklam shudham guna sangha rahitam ityartaha. Okay, because rather than talk about the material modes of goodness empowering the Brahmins, maybe we could take the same words as saying that the Lord reveals his own form of Vishnu, the maintainer, which is pure goodness, spiritual goodness. Or alternatively, when you desire maintenance, you assume the aspect of yourself, the form of Sri Vishnu, which is white, meaning pure, or in other words, devoid of connection with the material modes. After all, this form has no contact with the modes, as Shiva and Brahma do. Vishnu is not connected with the material modes, but Shiva and Brahma are. Shiva Brahma Vat Tasya Tat Sang Abhavat Tataiva Siddhantitam Sri Shukadevena Shiva Shakti Yutak Shashvat Trilungo Gunasam Vritaha Ityadau. He says, Harirhi Nirgunak Sakshad Purushak Pratpritek Paraha Ityadi. The same conclusion is also drawn by Sri Shukadeva when he makes the statements which include the words, Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature. Is that Shiva or Vishnu? Shiva? Okay, now let me read it. Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature. Okay, yeah. Shiva is united with Shakti, with material nature. And he manifests himself in three features, in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. Okay, his wife is Prakriti, and she's got three modes. So he ends up manifesting himself in three modes, Lord Shiva. And then it's said, Shukadeva says after that, Lord Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He's got 16,000 wives, but that doesn't mean he appears in 16,000 different modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, transcendental to material nature. Okay. We were explaining what the sattva means in relationship to Vishnu. The second interpretation is that it means his spiritual energy. The first interpretation is that he uses the material mode of goodness to empower the Brahmins to do the work of creation of maintenance.
Yes. That's what I want to clarify, because we always
there's two different interpretations. Yeah.
We always hear that there are three modes and there are three deities, Guna, Avataras, which take over those modes and run them.
Yes.
So
Vishnu runs mode of goodness, but he's not affected as the other two are.
Okay, because it doesn't have any connection, then it's just delegated to the Brahmanas, the Brahmanas in general, as a community.
The material mode of goodness?
Yeah.
The demigods, beginning with the Prajapatis. Sages especially. You know, before we have Brahmins on the earth, the original Brahmins are the Brahmins in heaven, the rishis. Okay, so they disseminate knowledge in this world. That's the influence of the material mode of goodness.
And then, if I didn't quote you exactly, because we know that Maya Shakti, Parvati Durga, she runs, actually, she is Gurmai, she runs the modes, they belong to her. So
yes.
How did it work? Okay, I can understand how Shiva is actually the third he may run the mode of ignorance, but Brahma is a Jiva. So how does Durga empower him to run the mode of passion, or how do they interact, in other words, as a simultaneous controller or so? For instance, in this case, mode of passion.
To whatever extent Lord Brahma is conditioned, is affected by material energy, that means being affected. To be affected by material energy means to be affected by one or more of material energy's modes. That's how she does her affecting, by the modes.
But he's
come under the influence of material energy means come under the influence of her three modes.
But he's supposed to be Guna Avatar at the same time. He's supposed to be the...
Yeah, he's Guna Avatar. He's controlling passion, but he's also affected by the three modes in subtle ways. Okay? He can be controlled. He's not supreme independent controller. But he can take the position of relative controller, even though he's not absolutely free, necessarily, from the influence of the three modes.
Maybe the position of control is given to someone.
It's an empowered position, a deputized empowerment. He doesn't have that power independently, because he's not, unless he's a pure devotee, he's not completely free from those modes.
So maybe the position of control or passion is given to him because in his... At this preliminary stage before he
because he has a tinge of passion, therefore that's what suits him. Yeah, it's a kind of dovetailing. Okay, yeah. Commentary: Devaki's husband Vasudev also deduced that the Supreme Lord's birth activities and forms are different from those of others. He knows this not only theoretically with Krishna's birth as his son. He will be experiencing the facts in his own life. And he prayed to the newborn Krishna. And that's the words Triloka Stitaye were cited from this verse that was given by, spoken as a prayer by Vasudev to newborn Krishna. Satvam Triloka Stitaye Svamayaya Vibarshi Shuklam Kaluvarna Atmanaha Sargaya Rattam Rajaso Prabrimhitam Krishnam Chavarnam Tamasa Janatyaye. That's what we were discussing in the paragraph. My Lord, your form is transcendental to the three material modes. Yet for the maintenance of the three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu in goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish, and at the end, when there is a need for annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. And then, it looks like Vasudev continues. Tvamasya lokasya vibho virakshu grihe vatirnosi mamakileshvara rajanya sangyasra koti yutapayar Nivyuhyamana nihanishyate nihanishyase chamuha chamuhu. O my Lord, proprietor of all creation, you have now appeared in my house, desiring to protect this world. I am sure you will kill all the armies that are moving all over the world under the leadership of politicians who are dressed as Kshatriya rulers, but are factually demons. They must be killed by you for the protection of the innocent public. These verses can be read in two ways, as referring either to the creation of the Brahmanas and other classes of human society, or to the three incarnations for controlling the material modes of preservation, creation, and destruction. Brahmanas, the Lord, by each of these modes, does maintenance, creation, and destruction. That can be understood that he does it through the living entities who are empowered by the modes, influenced by the modes, or that he does it by his guna avatars. Either way you can look at it. Brahmanas are supposed typically to be influenced by sattva-gun, kshatriya by rajas, and so on. But the practical reality is more complex. Some learned and disciplined brahmanas are nonetheless ambitious or temperamental. And some kings, like Yudhishthira, are fond of the peaceful association of scholars and sages. To be a true representative of the mode of goodness, one should be a brahman not just by birthright, but should be trained rightly in sattvika, character, and behavior. The Supreme Lord also uses the three modes to conduct material creation, maintenance, and annihilation as the guna avatars, himself, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. The three are not equally God. Brahma is the most qualified of finite living beings, engaged in creative work. And Shiva is a special expansion of God who lives in contact with material nature. Shiva Shakti Yutaksha Svat Triluka Trilingo Gunav Samvritaha. Those words, the first line were quoted in the chant. Vaikarikas Taijasascha Tamasascetyaham Trida. Lord Shiva is always united with his personal energy, the material nature, manifesting himself in three features in response to the entreaties of nature's three modes. He thus embodies the threefold principles of material ego in goodness, passion, and ignorance. Then, Harirhi Nirgunat Sakshad Purushat Prakritek Para Sasarva Drig Upadrashta Tambajan Nirguno Bhavet. Lord, Hari, however, has no connection with the material modes. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-seeing eternal witness, who is transcendental to material nature. One who worships him becomes similarly free from the material modes. Okay, that's the end of that paragraph. Any questions?
Just to clarify, so we had three varnas, or three types of brahmanas, Shukla, then Rakta, and then Krishna, right now. So I didn't get.
I don't know if it mentioned brahmanas. The word vipra was used in reference to the passion, but it didn't say passionate or ignorant brahmanas. It didn't mention them. So I think ignorant brahmanas are not very useful.
So that's only two kinds of brahmanas.
I think so. Two kinds of brahmanas that actually participate in helping, you know, do the business of creation. The ignorant brahmanas are useless.
And then the rest is like some mixed varnas, like kshatriyas or vaishyas.
Yes. It's also, it says viprati. It doesn't say just vipra, but vipra and so on. Other classes also.
First,
I think so.
So the
verse doesn't say vipra. The verse just says Shukla Tanu, your body and goodness. The commentary by Sridhar Swami, or by Jiva Goswami, says viprati, the forms of Brahmins and others in the mode of goodness. And then Brahmins and others in the mode of passion. Okay.
We know that Lord Brahma is under influence of mode of passion, but at the same time we accept him as an acharya, even a founder acharya or
not. But our Brahma, the Brahma who became pure devotee. So our Brahma is a pure devotee. So he can be the acharya of the whole sampradaya. It's okay.
So is it a different Brahma?
Different from which? Well, we're living in a particular day of Brahma, particular kalpa. Our Brahma in this universe has, by this time, he's in his 51st year now, he's already become a pure devotee. And he's acting as the acharya of our whole sampradaya. He was from the beginning of creation. Even though he didn't finish his sadhana, he founded the sampradaya at the beginning of creation. Okay, but he's not an ordinary Brahma. He's better than all the other Brahmas.
So that means even though if somebody is not completely pure devotee, he can be. Is it possible for him to be an acharya?
Well, he's. Yes. Especially when there's nobody better available. And he's the only person available. And he was about to become a pure devotee anyway. Krishna knew that this person is going to become a pure devotee. So he was appointed founder acharya of our sampradaya. Okay. So so I'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam. Ki jai.